Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the Sports Virus Podcast, everybody. I'm Joe Castellano. We're brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael, California, where they have had the lowest prices in Marin County for over 60 years. Well, today's guest is Mark Purdy, the longtime columnist at the San Jose Mercury News. Plenty to talk to him about with the way things are going with the Giants, the A's. Of course, the San Jose Sharks have a new general manager. We'll tell you about him. And we're going to talk about USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. All with Mark Purdy. Here's the conversation that we had on Tuesday morning. Well, Mark, I would say happy 4th of July, but, you know, it really wasn't a happy 4th of July after the shooting in Highland Park, Illinois. I mean, it just kind of put a damper on everything, whether it be sports or just, you know, the 4th of July. How are you doing, Mark? Thanks a lot for joining us.
Well, I think like most other, like every American is sad about that. It's, oh man, you know, it just, it did put a damper on my 4th of July, just thinking about the country and where we are with all that stuff. I continue to be optimistic that the forces of good will prevail over the forces of evil. Man, it's tough. I hope that the politicians and citizens can figure out a way through this. You know, sports has always been a way to help us get to, you know, on a couple levels. I don't mean to get too deep, but it's, you know, everybody says, well, it's a great distraction. Well, yeah, it is. But it also allows people of different backgrounds to be together both on the field and off and find just some way to talk to each other. And I'm hoping that, you know, sports can play that role as we move ahead. But, you know, this is not a new thing. And I suppose that they were talking about it after the Civil War, right? That, you know, growing up in Ohio, you were made well aware of the fact that the Cincinnati Reds were the first professional baseball team in the 1860s. And there was talk like after the Civil War, it allowed people from the South and North to at least come together and talk about something other than that, and could watch a baseball game together and play baseball together. So I don't know. Is that too deep? I don't mean to be too deep, but it sports always has done that. I know it's helped me make friends of different cultures, covering 14 Olympics and also interviewing people from all over the world. Yeah. So I don't think that's probably where I thought we'd be going with it. But you know, God bless us all, and I hope sports can help in that regard.
It brings up an interesting point about what Steve Kerr has done as the head coach of the Warriors. He's kind of used his platform to you know, get out a message, trying to figure out something here with the gun violence. You know, now he doesn't have that platform at this moment because the Warriors are done. They won their championship. But, you know, I wonder, what do you think about, you know, a sports figure trying to use his platform a little bit?
Oh, I think that's always been appropriate. Wow, Joe, you know, back in college, and I'm an old guy, I just turned 70. Back in college, I remember a group of us put together a my daughter and I have this ongoing discussion about whether it was crazier in the 60s when I grew up or it's crazier now. And it was pretty crazy in the 60s with the assassinations and the civil rights riots and unrest and the violence at the Democratic Convention in 1968 and students getting shot at Kent State. I mean, it was pretty crazy. And that was my, those were my high school years. And, you know, we figured out a way to get through that and get to, I think, a better place for a while. And now, so now, and back then, I knew where I was going with that. In college, I remember we put together a student-organized seminar about sports and society, and had speakers like this guy named Jack Scott out of Oberlin College, and of course that was the time in the media wake after Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who were you know, did the black fist salute, black glove fist salute at the Olympics in '68, and there were a lot of athletes that were speaking up then. And I think that was good then. I think it's good now. It's interesting that it's always been interesting to me. Not many people talked about this when Colin Kaepernick was doing his protest and then not able to get a job in the NFL. Tommy Smith, after his Olympic glove protest, Joe, in '68, the NFL hired him. The Cincinnati Bengals signed him, and he played wide receiver for them for a couple years. He was faster than, he had better feet than he did hands.
I didn't remember that. Yeah,
you know, and that was Paul Brown, who was all respect. I mean, I got to know him a little bit because I worked in Cincinnati for a while. Pretty conservative guy, but, you know, he thought that Smith had a right to protest and signed him to play for the Cincinnati Bengals, and he did play for the Cincinnati Bengals. It's kind of nutty to me that you know, Kaepernick couldn't get work after his social protest, but Tommy Smith, who had one of the most famous and controversial sports protests of the 20th century, was able to play in the NFL. So this is a situation that's gone back, you know, a long ways, and I think it's good. I think as long as it's responsible dialogue and peaceful protest, I think it's fine for athletes to express their wishes.
Yeah, and head coaches, I mean, and managers, Gabe Kapler.
And managers,
Gabe Kapler's been an outspoken guy. By the way, his team is in trouble right now. They are not playing well. I don't know if you've been watching lately, but, I mean, the defense has really been terrible, and that kind of bleeds into everything. If you're not playing well defensively, you know, I think you can't make up for when you're not hitting. You know, if you have decent pitching, the defense is kind of spoiling it. I think that just kind of ruins everything when you're not playing well defensively. What do you think?
Well, you know, the pitcher Rodon had a quote that I saw today. I think it was after yesterday's game, it was Carlos Rodon said, "I think something, you see, we're playing really bad baseball."
Yeah, they really, you know, are. Yeah,
and that's you know, when things were going good for the Giants last year, I remember saying to somebody, you know, everybody's talking about a lot of things, but you know, it comes down to you're playing baseball properly, right? You're making the right mental decisions. You're throwing the ball to the right base. You're making the right cutoff. You're, you know, taking the right pitches, and you're mentally into the game and not making errors. And now I see the highlights and I read the box scores. I haven't watched pitch by pitch. I'll be honest, I'm a retired guy. But just looking at these highlights, it's really sad, you know, to see. No, really, I was looking at those guys in the eye. If I was still working, I'd say, this is really sad the way you're playing baseball. You're not playing baseball properly. And, you know, it goes back to stuff you should have learned in Little League and high school, right? It's really it's tough to watch if you're a Giants fan, I suppose, and the A's, of course, aren't any better. You know, you want. I guess I wonder how that can happen. Is it more mental than physical? I have to believe these guys. Some of it, you know what, Joe? Remember infield practice before games when they kind of
they don't do that anymore.
They definitely don't do that anymore. You younger folks out there, it used to be before the game, going back into what, maybe the 80s, you know, the infield would go out there and they'd hit ground balls to them before the game. And it was fun to watch. I remember, you know, when I was working in Cincinnati and they had those great teams in the '70s, the Big Red Machine, those guys would all take infield. Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, Dave Concepcion and Pete Rose. They would take infield practice before the game, right? And it was fun to watch him throw the ball around and pick up. I'm wondering if the Giants should go back to that.
They might have to. I mean, they definitely missed not having Brandon Crawford in there. That's for sure.
So what? No, so what? You know, the guy who's, you know, if you're a major leaguer, you should not overthrow the bag. You know, you should always go to the right bag, and you should, you know, Brandon Crawford's good, and they miss him, but this is just basic stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of comical, really, yeah.
Yeah, comical and sad.
Sad at the same time.
So, really, I mean, if you're paying those good Major League prices to watch Major League Baseball, you want to see Major Leaguers doing Major League stuff. And right now, the Giants are not fulfilling their end of the bargain.
You mentioned the A's. Yeah, they've been struggling. But it's interesting to follow the story of whether or not they're staying in Oakland. I mean, the latest vote was favorable, but it seems like there are so many hurdles, Mark. Do you think they'll stay? I mean, they got Las Vegas sort of waiting in the wings.
How long do we have, Joe? You know, that it's incredible to me. So I retired in 2017. And I had been writing about the A's ballpark saga for like 10 or 15 years before that, and we're still there.
Yeah.
And, yes, there are a whole bunch of hurdles to go. The politics in Oakland, I'm not an Oakland resident. I'm not familiar and deeply with Oakland politics, but I do know that there's a lot ahead in terms of being able of approving. This is not just a ballpark project in Oakland. It's a $12 billion redevelopment project on the waterfront, of which the ballpark is 1/12 of the project. And so keep in mind when the city council and then they did get this approval from the Bay Commission, which was big, but now they've got to figure out how they're going to pay for all the infrastructure. And I know that they want some of this housing to be, market rate some of it for less than market rate housing, affordable housing.
Yeah.
And so the A's don't want to do that because they want to be able to get more investors in this. And they know they can get more investors if they don't have to build affordable housing, which brings down the cost of, or brings down the possible profits of that, right? So there's a lot going on here, and it would be a lot simpler if the A's had just decided to build at the Coliseum site, tear down what they have, and build a ballpark there. But John Fisher, the owner of the team, he's a real estate guy. You know, people are not familiar, probably you would be because you're a soccer guy, you know, with the Earthquake Stadium here in San Jose.
Yeah.
This is kind of a smaller version of what they want to do in Oakland with the A's. So the Earthquake soccer team, also owned by John Fisher, cut a deal with San Jose where San Jose rezoned a big area near the airport. And in turn, the Earthquakes promised they would build a stadium there, but they got this land rezoned. And also, actually, a piece of property in South San Jose got rezoned from to residential, so they can make more money off that. And now, if you drive by the Earthquake Stadium by the airport in San Jose and keep going down Coleman Road, there's huge development. You've been down here, probably seen that, right? Huge development near it. It's called the Coleman Highline Development, and John Fisher is making a lot of money off of developing all that property around the stadium, the Earthquake Stadium, that he got approval for because he agreed to pay and build for the Earthquake Stadium. So they want to do the same thing in Oakland. It's complicated there, more complicated because of the site, railroad tracks nearby, the port, and trucking industry, and the Schnitzer Steel Company. I'm not convinced they won't go to some sort of ballot measure there, and that's going to be a whole other thing. They may get it done there, but somebody's going to spend a whole lot more money and a whole lot more time. And I hope I live to see it if they get it done.
Why would they only build a 35,000 seat ballpark too? I mean, wouldn't you want a bigger ballpark?
Well, no, I don't think so because number one,
you know, baseball is not as popular as it used to be, number one, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the Giants probably don't need as big a stadium, as big a ballpark as they have right now, right? That many times have they filled that up this season? And that's going on all across baseball. The revenue in baseball is the attendance has gone down, but revenue from online and broadcast and streaming and all that has gone up. So that's number one. Number two, if you have 35,000 seats to sell, then maybe you can sell more season tickets because people would be wanting to guarantee a seat there for the Yankee series. And if you only have 35,000 seats, only 35,000 people could come see the Yankees or the Red Sox. And so, you know, it encourages people to buy tickets in advance, I guess.
The hotter ticket, the smaller. Yeah.
And also where that location is. I mean, I don't know, you know, where people are going to park. I don't know if you want, you know, if you had a 45,000-50,000 seat ballpark, I don't know where all the people would park, and then you have to get. I still think the biggest problem with that site is they got the Union Pacific Railroad tracks running right alongside it, and so far I have not seen any plan to build a bridge over those tracks for the spectators or cars or a tunnel under them. You know, they are expecting everybody to just go across the tracks with a regular crossing, and that's a busy, you know, that's Union Pacific's main track through the Bay Area. And you know, that, so I, you know, people get hit on those tracks right now. It runs through right there, you know. So when you all of a sudden you got 30,000 people going to, you know, that's the only way you can get to the ballpark is go across those tracks unless you come by water. And you know, I don't know how they're going to handle that. So I don't think you want a whole lot of people crossing those tracks, and you're going to have a number of people do it anyway. And the other part is the hazards of. I think Union Pacific is probably going to figure a way to get this on the ballot because corporate wise, because you know, those they're derailments, right?
Oh, yeah.
Also, you know, trains can get stalled. Well, what happens if a train is stalled and nobody can get to the game or away from the game? Now people are pissed off at Union Pacific, or I don't know how they figure out to deal with that part of it. I think eventually they're going to have to build a bridge over the tracks or underneath, but who pays for that? The size of the ballpark is right, I think, if they get that thing done. When they were planning to build, don't get me started on this, they should have let the A's move to San Jose, but when they were planning to build a ballpark in downtown San Jose, it was only going to be like about 30,000 to 32,000 people.
Yeah.
Because Fisher and Lou Wolf at the time thought that their plan was they were going to have maybe 30,000 seats, but more suites and luxury boxes for the Silicon Valley crowd, right? And that they would end up with the same amount of revenue as if they had 40,000 seats, right? So, or 45,000 yep. seats. So maybe that's also part of this too. I have not seen in detail plans about that, but Oakland's corporate market is a lot different than Silicon Valley or San Francisco. So I'm not sure how that all figures in, but best of luck to them. I think, though, it's going to be a slog. It's going to be a slog, and I can't see that getting figured out by the end of the year as they want to. The other part, the piece of it, is Las Vegas, and we don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. But I still have not seen, and this is a product of, you know, there's not many journalists anymore covering this stuff, right? I still have not seen a story on what really is real in Las Vegas and what is not. Right?
Yeah.
Does Las Vegas really have something? I mean, we know they have property there that the A's are looking at, but Nevada and Las Vegas spent a whole bunch of public money on the Raiders stadium. The hockey team there plays in a privately built arena on the Strip. The Raiders stadium is near the Strip. If the A's don't, you know, two things. If the A's don't build near the Strip, and instead, one thing I've seen is they might build out near where their minor league team plays there in Summerlin, which is, if you know the geography, Joe, it's out northwest of downtown in the Strip, kind of far away from stuff. Is that really what baseball wants? And so, you know, getting people out there and back. And then two, if, why move to Las Vegas where you'd be in the same situation you were in here where you were the, you know, right now they got Oakland's full attention, right? In Las Vegas, they'd be behind the Raiders, and, you know, the hockey team's incredibly popular. They've had great success. And so you'd be the third team in, and there's talk of putting an NBA team in there. So half of the Bay Area market is bigger than the entire Las Vegas market, right? In terms of population, TV sets, industry, businesses. So I'd like to know exactly what they have in Las Vegas and how much of this is bluff and how much of it is real.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to make sense to do everything you can to make it work in Oakland, for sure.
But the question is, Joe, how do you define making it work in Oakland? You know, I think you make it work in Oakland by building at the Coliseum site. The A's, by the way,
that would have been the best. Yeah,
the A's own half that Coliseum site. They bought the county's half of that Coliseum site. So if they thought the Coliseum site was so crappy, why did they do that? Why did they buy that?
Yeah. Doesn't seem to make sense.
I have questions. But I'm happy not working, so I'll just continue to ask questions and have opinions on demand.
We'll have more with former San Jose Mercury News columnist Mark Purdy right after this.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give them a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
Let's switch gears and talk about your hometown San Jose Sharks. They fired their head coach, Bob Bugner, and the entire staff, and now they've moved on. And today, as we sit here on Tuesday, they just named a new general manager, Mike Greer, the former Sharks player. I always liked him as a player. He was gritty. And now he is the first black general manager in the NHL, which is awesome. And I think he's going to do a great job. He's going to bring some new energy to the team. What do you think?
Well, the team definitely needs an injection of energy and freshness. Mike, you're correct. Mike was a really tough player, but he was also a really smart guy. And I remember interviewing him numerous times while he was with the Sharks, and I could tell he was a smart guy. I knew of his family background. You may know his dad was a vice president of player personnel for the New England Patriots, and then I think another Houston NFL team. His brother is the general manager of Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I knew of his background, and I remember talking to him one day and said, "Would you?" The question I asked him, I said, "Is you know I could," and he was really good talking about hockey. And, you know, I just said, you know, I see you're a smart guy. Would you like to be a coach in the NHL one day? Thinking he might become the first black NHL coach, right? And he said, no, I don't see me doing that. I just, you know, I'll probably just, when I retire, just go away with my family and enjoy myself. So it turns out I was asking the wrong question. I should have asked, would you like to be a general manager of an NHL team one day? Right? And, So he has done the work. He has been an assistant coach, and then he's worked for the New York Rangers in their personnel department. He has not been an assistant general manager, which is usually the path you take. But I think, I'm sure he and his brother and his dad have talked about being how you manage be a general manager of a professional franchise, and the NFL is certainly just as complicated and intense an executive environment as the National Hockey League. So I think that will do him in good stead. I hope that he brings in a whole new group of people It's unclear to me, and I'm not at the press conference, so I don't know, but is he going to just clean house? And, you know, right now the personnel, main personnel guy for the Sharks is the son of the former general manager, Doug Wilson Jr., whose dad, Doug Wilson Sr., well, you know, was the general manager until last year when his health issues induced him to step down. But the assistant general manager, Joe Will, who has been with the franchise since day one, is he going to stay on, or is Greer going to come in and, you know, wipe the slate clean, bring in a whole new group of people? He obviously has to hire a coach. I think that was, you could see that coming. I don't know why they waited so long to fire Bob Boughner, who they only fired last week. But, and Boughner, I thought, did an okay job. He had a tough situation. He gets paid for next year. His contract has one more year to run. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see who he hires his coach. But I'm curious to see what Greer's overall plan is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there's speculation that David Quinn could be the new head coach because he was the Rangers coach who came from a Boston University background, played there, coached there. And of course, Mike Greer was a former player at BU. So there's that speculation.
They were terriers.
Speculation is there for that. But I mean, like you said, what are they going to do as far as just the overall philosophy of the team? Because it does seem like a rebuilding type situation. You do have your Logan Couture and your Brent Burns, but you know, they're not what they were. You know, they don't have Marlowe, they don't have Thornton, they don't have Pavelski, all those guys. So they're going to have to start building these young players, you would think.
Well, and they've got some young prospects, and none that look as good as Couture and Burns, but
Tomas Hurdle is another.
Tomas Hurdle, yeah, none as good as Hurdle. But the big thing is that, you know, those years that they were close to winning the Stanley Cup and they made trades, or they traded away a lot of high draft picks. So they're missed. So they have a lot of guys over 32 and a lot of prospects, including some that look pretty good. A kid named Thomas Bortolo came up from the University of Michigan after the NCAA tournament last year, and they signed him right after that. And he played like the last, I don't know, 8 games with the team and looked pretty good. And he's an older guy because he played college hockey. So they got they got a bunch of guys under 24, under 23, and a bunch of guys over 32, and they're missing that middle class age 24 and 32 because of all those years where they traded away those number one picks. Hurdle's the one guy that, and Timo Meier. You know,
yeah, Timo's great. Yeah,
the two years they didn't trade away the picks, they picked some good players, but they really need to fill in that gap. And I don't know if they do that by trades or sign free agency, but they're up against the salary cap. You know, again, those years where they went for it have put them in a tough spot. And their owner, the 78 years old German guy, Hasso Plattner, one of the richest guys in the world. And he will spend up to the salary cap as much as he can. But will he buy out players to get to where they want to go? He has said he wants to win. He wants to get back to the playoffs now. He does not want to rebuild. And, you know, I think if you're a Sharks fan, that's probably what you want to hear. I'm not sure how you get that done. So Mike Greer better be smarter than even I think he is to figure out a way. I'm sure they'll try to maybe trade away or buy out some of those veterans and get younger, but you got to get younger with the right people. And I think that there's a way they could get back to the playoffs fairly soon, but there's a difference between making the playoffs and being good enough to win the Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like in the NBA, who the Warriors play in the early rounds this year?
Memphis.
Denver,
the first
like
round, yeah.
Denver. Okay, Denver's good enough to make the playoffs, but Denver's not good enough to win the NBA title, right?
Right.
And so I think the Sharks would like to be the Denver Nuggets of hockey as soon as possible, and then maybe think about a Stanley Cup in another, I don't know, four or five years down the line. It'll be okay to be the Denver Nuggets of hockey.
Well, about when the Sharks probably are, you know, a much better team is about when USC, my alma mater, and UCLA will be joining the Big Ten Conference in a couple of years. That is just stunning to me that this is going to happen, because I didn't see it happening, and I guess some other people did. What do you think? Is this a smart move for SC and UCLA?
Well, that rumbly noise you hear from Central Ohio is Woody Hayes rolling over in his grave. You know, I'm a Big Ten guy, Joe. You know, I went to school at Northwestern. So welcome USC to November games in Evanston. It's going to be snowy and all that. It's the way college football in general is today. It was strictly a money move. I mean, I'm trying to, who are they thinking of here? I mean, are they thinking of people like us who are alumni of the schools? Are they thinking of the athletes? Are they thinking, it seems to me who they're thinking of here is the people who watch college football at Buffalo Wild Wings on Saturday afternoon and drink beer and just kind of like seeing the games. Oh, there's an interesting matchup. And because that's where the money is, right? The TV stuff. I don't know. Were USC alums banging down the door to get out of the Pac-12? I don't think they were.
No.
I don't know any of my Northwestern alum friends who were thinking, yeah, it'd be a great thing if, you know, UCLA joined the Big Ten.
No.
You know, I mean, I will say this. Academically, it's a fit. Right?
Right.
Those are both really good academic schools, and the Big Ten prides itself on being the best athletic conference in terms of having really good universities. But I guess I'm happy that my alma mater may come out and play in the Coliseum and then the Rose Bowl every other year or third year or whatever. But I just don't think it's good for college football in general, particularly here on the West Coast. I remember as a kid growing up in the Midwest, I just always thought the Pac-12 was a pretty cool conference, you know, going up and down the coast of these teams, and it was seemed kind of exotic and glamorous to me in the Midwest. And it never occurred to me that we would have a situation where, I mean, I didn't like it when the Big Ten asked Maryland and Rutgers to join, right? And now your UCLA Bruins softball team is going to have to get on a plane and go to Piscataway to play.
Just doesn't make sense. Yeah,
it's pretty crazy. For if you're sitting at home on a Saturday afternoon watching TV, it'll probably be a lot of fun to see USC go back and play Penn State or Ohio State. But for the athletes and the students and the alumni, I don't know. Were you unhappy playing Oregon and Oregon State?
No. And I think a lot of USC and UCLA alums that are in the Bay Area are going to miss those two schools coming up to play Stanford and Cal. I mean, that's
exactly
a big loss. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you are for sure, right? I mean, and we haven't even talked about what does this mean for Cal and Stanford, right?
Right. I don't think they know yet.
No, I don't think they know yet either. I don't want to say I was stunned because nothing surprises me in college football. And here's another what little insight I have. So, Joe, after I retired, it was very nice. Some people called and asked me to help them out with different things, and sometimes would pay me. And one of the things I did was, remember when the college football playoff national championship game was here in was it 2019? January 2019, I think.
At Levi's
Stadium. So the run-up to that was in 2018 season. So that host committee for that game was headquartered here in the South Bay, really. And so they hired me to produce content for their website and also do some other things, too. This was actually fun. I got up. Go to the local high school in my neighborhood and asked, I knew the well, the bands needed somewhere to practice like the day before the game. So I went to the local band director here at Lincoln High School in San Jose and said, how'd you like the Alabama band to come practice on your field?
Nice.
He went, what?
Yeah.
So I got to do that. That was fun. I got to help set that up. In doing that and in being involved with that host committee and working with them in terms of producing the stuff for their website and kind of watching the machinery. And I also did a very little work in terms of coordinating with the city of San Jose. They had like a thing at the convention center and like other stuff around town. And so one thing I learned was these schools are really all out for themselves. I'll give you one example. There were different events around town that the host committee wanted to do, and they wanted to have helmets from each conference. I'm talking about this is in the run up to the championship game. Nobody knew who was playing in it until the last week or two, but they wanted to have like a helmet with the Big Ten logo on it, and one with the SEC logo, and one with the Pac-12 logo. And so they could take them around to these events and have the helmet, you know, dress up the place, right, when they were doing these events.
Yeah.
So they asked these conferences to send these helmets, and they did. And then one conference, I won't say which conference it was, it was the SEC, sent a bill and said, if you're going to use our logo,
oh my!
On this helmet, you. This is how much you owe us.
Oh,
and of course, the people running the Coast Committee said, "What? Right? We're doing this to promote an event that one of your teams is probably going to be involved with, and in fact was. Alabama played Clemson in that game. You know, why are you asking us to pay you money to do something to promote? You know, and this is just our policy. You know, I honestly don't know what happened. I don't think they did pay them. And I don't think BSC, I don't know. But I do know that they sent a request for that. And then I remember doing stuff where I was trying to find out how many Big Ten and how many Ohio State alums there were in the Bay Area, right? And so I call back to the conference office and the Ohio State office and it's well, no, we're not sure we can tell you that information. Huh. That's proprietary information, you know? I said, what? I mean, this is, again, we're trying to do something that's a good thing in terms of letting people know this event, this game's happening and that there are this many Big Ten alums here that might be interested if a Big Ten team gets involved, right? So everybody, it seemed to me, everybody in college football is out for themselves, including within conferences, including conference versus conference. It's not like the NFL where you have a structure where the commissioner, yes, the owners do feud with each other, but when it comes to business, they are all on the same page together and marketing and moving ahead and everything. College football, not the same. And just look at the stuff with the name, image, likeness and how each school is kind of out for itself in terms of how they're doing it. And some schools like Oregon have and I think USC have what's called a collective where they're raising money and, you know, they're out of the vitamins. Stanford, I don't think, is doing anything along that regard. My alma mater, Northwestern, I know, is putting together a class for athletes about how to leverage and take advantage of the name, image, likeness stuff, although they cannot help under the NCAA rules, which maybe nobody's following anyway, but under the NCAA rules, the school's not supposed to help make the link of name, image, likeness between athlete and sponsor or whatever.
Right.
long way of me saying every school's out for itself. Every conference is out for itself. It's really a balkanized, college football in particular, college sports in general, is really a balkanized, selfish environment. And maybe it always has been, and the money is now just, yes, it's all about the money, but the money is now just exacerbating a problem that's already been there. But, here we are. And, I won't lie, it'll be fun to see UCLA play at Michigan, right?
right?
And Michigan to come out to play UCLA in the Rose Bowl, or Iowa or Wisconsin. But I don't see that. It reminds me of like when so you've been to Las Vegas, right? And you go. I remember when I was covering a fight. Remember when they used to have big fights in Las Vegas? They'd send me to it. And I checked it when the Mirage Hotel had just been built. They opened that with a big fight. I think it was Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns, maybe, or somebody. Anyway, I check into the hotel and I walk into the Mirage. This is a Mirage, right? Yeah, and they have, and behind the registration desk, they have a big aquarium, huge aquarium with sharks swimming in it. And I'm going like, wow, that's wild. But you know, like who, you know, when you stay at a hotel and they ask you to fill up that card or now online, you know, what can we do to improve our hotel? Like who puts down, you know, your hotel's really good, but if you only had an aquarium with sharks behind the registration desk, that would be the one thing that would put it over to make sure I stay there. Right. You know, nobody does that. It's like, when I pet peeves at Major League ballparks, they play that loud music between innings where, you know, it used to be, I remember fond memories going to my dad to a game in between innings, you'd talk about the strategy and what you just saw and everything. Now you can't even hear, you know, the conversation next to you.
No.
That's a tangent. But again, who decided that when they filled out the card? Like, you know, it'd be great if I went to a Major League game and I couldn't hear my dad when he sits next to me. I don't get it. So again, who filled out the card that said, you know, the Big Ten's pretty good, but you know, if we had UCLA and USC, that'd be really something. And likewise with the Pac-12, right? I guess I don't get it, but will I watch the games? Yeah, and you probably will too, right?
Oh yeah.
Are you gonna make a road trip to West Lafayette?
Probably not, but you and I will have a vested interest when USC plays Northwestern, so at least we have that going for us.
Exactly that. And you know, in West Lafayette, you know, with Purdue, you know the connection between Purdue and UCLA, right? Well, there was a great coach at UCLA,
John Wooden. Right.
And he was an All-American at Purdue.
Right, before he went to UCLA, right.
Exactly, and I think they have statues of them at both places. So there are some connections, you know.
Yeah,
you know, but is college football better for this? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And the last thing I wanted to ask you about, Mark, was your experience at the College World Series. That was the first time that you went there. I saw that you were, putting out a note about that on Facebook. So
yeah,
I've been there a bunch of times. It's an awesome experience, isn't it?
It's really fun. Thank you for being my Facebook friend, Joel. I appreciate it. and all my Facebook friends. That labels me to stay in touch with so many people. I'm not. Facebook has a lot of downside, but there are some good sides to it too. Well, I had actually been to the College Football Series once. College Baseball World Series once in 1995. I was on my way back from somewhere, and the bosses said Stanford's in the College World Series. Wouldn't you stop in Omaha and cover it? And I went, sure, you know, and I went there and I thought, this is really fun. I'd love to come back here sometime as a fan. And so my friend, a good friend from Cincinnati, Bob Salmon, who none of you know, but longtime friends. And we just always said, wait, let's go. And we were going to go in 2020, and we all know what happened in 2020 and 2021. So, well, this year we'll go. And I recommend it highly to any baseball fan or any college sports fan. It's the biggest thing in Omaha all year. The town goes all out for it. It's a lot of fun. And with eight teams involved, that means you have fans from eight different schools all walking around town. It's a college crowd. It's not, drunk people like the Super Bowl and some of the other events you and I've been to. It's not, people drink beer, but they're not, it's a college crowd, you know,
right.
College students,
a little
college
tamer,
alums.
Yeah.
In most cases, tamer, but also just that mentality where we're not here to get drunk and tell the other guys that they suck, right? I mean, it's, the Texas played Texas A&M there, and that got a little interesting, but again, there weren't any fights, there were no fights or anything, and also, you know, in college baseball, there's actually more action with the stolen bases, hit and run. You know, the great high school pitchers, end up usually signing pro contracts, so the hitting is more hitting is better than the pitching in college baseball in general. So you get more action on the bases. That creates more interesting games to me. And then you have these guys. A lot of these guys will be drafted, but a lot of them won't. And so for them, this is the biggest thing in their baseball lives. And so the emotion and the passion is great, especially when you get to those elimination games. It's eight teams, it's double elimination, goes all week. I was there for 5 days, or excuse me, 4 days, saw five games. And every one of them was fun. And, you know, getting to know alums of each school, the traditions of each school. It's just, I don't know. And Omaha, you know, not a bad town.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, you know, I've been there a bunch of times.
You know,
it's really cool.
They got like, you know, I think they have like triple figure steakhouses downtown. And it's had a lot of tradition there. It's I don't think there's anything else quite like that in college sports or pro sports. You know, eight teams like that coming together all playing this, and I don't know if I'll go back, but I'm glad I went and had that experience, and I recommend it. Hard for me to believe you won't have a have you been back there since the new stadium?
I have
you
once,
have, right?
Yeah, and it's really nice.
They got the new stadium's nice, plus also the area around it, they turn into like a baseball village. It's
cool.
It is cool. And you are gonna, and if this is your interest, you are gonna see future major leaguers there, right? So Ole Miss was a great story that won it. They were the last team into the tournament. They had a losing record in the regular season in SEC. And yet they won, and they won the whole thing. And you know, the Ole Miss fans were. This was a great experience. So between games one day, my friend and I would go across the street to have a pizza, and there are a bunch of Ole Miss fans there. And one is the dad of one of the players, and I struck up a conversation. And he's there with his son is not there because he's with the team, but you know, these young co-eds, comely co-eds, lovely co-eds are there with him and you know, his wife and everything. And I said, so who are these young girls? He says, I think one of them is my son's girlfriend, but maybe all of them are. I'm not sure. They somehow make it work. I said, well, good. That's good. You know? And then I got to see his son pitch the next day. So that was fun.
That was fun. Very nice. I'm glad you had
fun.
And
I hope, I hope you get to go back sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mark, thanks a lot for the time. I really appreciate it. I will have to check in on you every once in a while, but appreciate all of your opinions and a lot of knowledge there about the A's and the Sharks and the Big Ten and all that. I appreciate it.
That's right. Well, I'm happy anybody still cares what I have to say. And thanks again to all the readers over the years who spent 5 minutes with me with my column. I tried to never underestimate that, and it makes me really happy to hear somebody say, you know, they enjoyed something I wrote many years ago that I forgot I wrote. You know, it's really makes me feel I didn't screw up in my job here, and I'm happy you're still carrying the flag for responsible broadcast journalism, Joe, and you know, keep fighting the good fight.
That's former San Jose Mercury News columnist Mark Purdy. Join us again next week for another edition of the Sports Virus Podcast. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.